Show. The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. An hour of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open source, open mics. Live from the Linux Link Tech Show studio, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up, and take it away. Take it away.
Alright, let me kill off this one. I'll go to the...
Oh, it sounds so good. You need
a little fat one there going, right?
Rub yourself for me, Dan.
Yeah, well... What the hell? Should we just, should we go?
Let's do it, man.
I'll just put in the intro.
It's going.
I'll just put in the intro music. I'll put in the intro
later
music.
On.
Yeah.
the people who pick up the feed will get it later.
But how are they going to know we're starting?
Yeah.
Hey, we started. There you go.
Yeah, but you know what? Screw it. This just. If you want me to play it, then I got to shut down the I got to turn the volume down on the machine.
Fuck it, don't play it. Let's just say this is the start of the show and we do it.
Everything
let's
is working.
Going, man.
Let's not rock the boat just now, okay?
Yeah.
9:35.
It's bad enough I'm still doing this off my cell phone, so.
Somebody's going to get a big bill soon.
Big bill soon.
No, 9 o'clock started my unlimited time, so.
But that's 9 o'clock Pacific time, right?
No, it's 9 o'clock this time. Well, I tried to get in on the regular, my regular phone, and for some reason I kept getting a busy signal when I tried to get into the conference room, so I don't know. I don't know if maybe it's like the tones are a little bit off on this phone and it doesn't want to work or what. I don't know.
Glory.
Then get it on!
All right, go ahead, start talking.
All right. This is Linux Link Tech Show, episode 135. We're going to call this...
Finally.
The 404 episode. There's no music in the beginning.
No, it's 404, 404, 404, 404.
Yeah, I can't connect. So,
now, we all have to remember that because we're all dialing in, we all have to talk separately this time. Otherwise,
yeah, Alan's on a cell phone, so he's got, like, digital computer voice.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I can't figure out what the fuck the problem is on this end, and since we got all the problems on the other end, I'm not really worrying too much about it now.
Yes, here he is, Alan Metzler, our audio man, who sounds like a freaking robot.
Yeah. what the problem is, man, is that we're doing this all remote. It seems that every time we attempt that, the wheels just fall off, you know?
Because I'm not there, that's why. I'm not there to fuck it up in person.
So we're all back from Boston. We had a really good time up there, man. I really enjoyed it. You guys had a terrible time, didn't you?
What'd you say?
You had a terrible time in Boston, confess.
No, I had a good time, actually.
I
enjoyed
time,
myself.
Man.
Yeah, it was a blast, man.
I can't
cool
wait to do it.
I
love meeting. Yeah, I love meeting the listeners, our listeners out there and stuff. That was fantastic. I wish more of you could have come and met us. Hopefully next year, right? Or you know, maybe we can somehow swing getting to a different event or something like that during the year. That would be really cool too. Meet more of you. That was my favorite
cool.
part. The other really cool part was. You know, getting to meet the other .org people. You know, people running the people behind the projects, so to speak. And, you know, a lot of them are cool and really smart people. And it's cool to kind of connect with them, you know?
It was definitely a different perspective being, you know, a presenter as opposed to just walking around and grabbing some free shit. It felt like we actually had to
still did our best to grab free shit, though.
Yeah, we still got to grab free shit, you know. We actually were able to grab the free shit before anybody else was there, so. We had choice pickings, you know. So, any of you guys ever get a chance to check out the new Fedora 5 install?
I haven't taken a look at it yet. I remember looking at it at the show, though. That was really cool.
I got it installed on a spare drive here, and it's pretty nice, man. For Fedora, it's real nice. It's got
Does it hump right along on a regular computer?
What's that?
I said, does it hump right along on a regular computer? Because, like, when we were taking a look at it... Go ahead.
This thing is nothing special I'm running on. I'm running on a 2.4 gigahertz Celeron.
I'm going to bounce off here for a second. I'm trying to get back onto the X-Lite one. I'll be right back.
Okay.
With 512 mega memory, so it's not like it's a speed demon or anything. And it's pretty snappy. The thing that really jumped out at me was the fact that GNOME 2.14, it's so much faster than the old, 2.12. It's really noticeable.
Do I sound a little bit better?
You sound better, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. For some reason, now all of a sudden I started getting audio through X-Lite.
Okay.
Don't ask me why.
Are you running on superior Apple product?
I'm running on... Well, I tried it on both, actually. And for some reason, I couldn't get it on either one. And then all of a sudden, while we were talking here, I clicked on the dial. All of a sudden, I heard a dial tone. So don't ask me what the fuck it was.
It's working. Just be happy.
It's one of those strange things. I'm not going to ask any more questions because it just seems to be working.
Well, I was talking about Fedora Core 5. And it's real nice, man, compared to the old versions, 4 and 3, which I've taken a look at. It's pretty snappy. GNOME is really quick. The only gripe that I have with Fedora Core is the whole yum aspect of it. I find that when you go start installing packages, I don't know, it seems that it slows down as you go along. Maybe it's the fact that they don't have as many repositories as some of the other distributions. Like, if I do package installations, say, like, on Debian or, like, Ubuntu, it's really fast installing. I don't know. I don't know if Fedora Core people, notice the same thing. I know Gomorex is a Fedora Core person. I think Brian Shoprod, I think he was running Fedora Core also, a few other people. But it's real nice. Definitely check it out, man, if you get a chance. I think it's definitely worth installing and seeing, if you're liking. I'm also looking forward to checking out the new version of SUSE when it comes out in a couple weeks. I'm actually even considering maybe even buying the box version. The last time I bought a box Linux distribution, I think, was Red Hat 6.1.
Ooh, that's a while ago.
Yeah, that's the last time I actually paid for Linux. So we'll see what happens.
And now you said that this thing sped right along, right? There was no problems with it, with a lot of user space lag. Because I
thought it was pretty good, man.
I was interested to know how it performs on a an average Joe machine, because when we looked at it at the show, of course they're running on a dual core machine, dual core 2. Something gigahertz machine with apeshit RAM in it or whatever. Yeah. So, of course, it was running really, really good there, right? I was totally impressed with it there. But I wanted
I think it's pretty snappy, man.
Yeah.
On those 2.4 gigahertz Celeron, 512 mega memory, it's pretty quick, man.
I tell you what, it looked really, really nice. I was impressed with the look and feel of it. Reminded me a lot of Ubuntu, except for it was blue, And, Well, really,
What do you have against brown now?
But it's just, I love Ubuntu to death. I think it's a little slow, and I hate the shit brown.
You know what's slow with Ubuntu?
Get away from it. It's pervasive,
No, GNOME is slow on Ubuntu. I'm running Ubuntu on my laptop. I'm running it with KDE, and it's noticeably faster.
You know what's slow on Ubuntu?
XFCE, yeah.
You know what's slow on Ubuntu?
What?
Breezy. Switch to Dapper, you'll notice a big difference.
Really?
Were you running it?
I'm running Dapper now.
That's because of the new, you think that's because of the new GNOME that they're using and stuff, or what?
It's just, I mean, the boot up time is like almost like Arch.
Really?
On my PPC.
The boot up time on Fedora 5 is really good, man.
I mean, the boot up time is significantly faster. When I fired up GNOME, I was like, I expected to see that, you know, that GNOME screen that pops up and it shows you all the things that are starting up. Those that little like the KDE one has too.
Uh huh.
I saw that come up, and a few seconds after that, not even a few seconds, it was like that came up for like 2 seconds, and boom, the GNOME was up and running. Now, Dapper Drake is still in beta testing, and there are problems with it.
And there are problems.
So, I mean, all's not rosy.
Now, did you do a straight upgrade, Dan?
I did that last night.
How long did it take to actually upgrade all your packages?
I started at about 11. Little after 11, and I was finished by about 1:30 or so. It had to download 681 megs of software, and then, you sit there and you let it run for a while, and 15 minutes later you come back and see that it's been stuck on a, do you want to use the default or update to the latest package maintainer's configuration file? And after that, for about 3 or 4 times, you know.
And what do? You just point the repositories to the new Dapper repositories?
Yes, I just changed the app sources list to point to Dapper.
What did you do, app get dist upgrade or just app get upgrade?
I did app get dist upgrade.
Yeah, that's the way you're supposed to do it when you go to...
Now, the reason why I did this, and this ties back to stuff we were talking about up at Boston, was a question arose as to whatever happened to Jeff Zartler, who ran the SIG. Jeff Zartler was at the LUG meeting last night. Now, Jeff...
The LUG meeting that only you went to.
That's right. And Mark Stanley and a few other people that were there that you guys just chose to ignore. Anyway...
The only one from the show.
Anyway.
Hey, man, wait. I have a good excuse. I got a new tooth.
You should have showed it off at the LUG meeting.
Remember the tooth?
I couldn't show it to anybody. I was just drooling on myself until the meeting was over last night, you know?
So did you go for that gold one you were talking about?
Oh, no, yeah. I got the platinum wrapper thing going on, you know?
But anyway.
What's up, dog?
I had asked. Dog. I asked Zartler how the SIG was going, and he said it's going okay, but he's been going to a Mac SIG for a little while, which got us on the case of he's running OS 10, but also Ubuntu. And he had let on that you can now get the Airport Extreme card working, Airport Extreme 2 card working under Linux. So he gave me the forum post, an Ubuntu forum for doing that, and I tried it under... Breezy, but it didn't have the right kernel module, so I had to upgrade to Dapper Drake to get this working. And, you know, sure enough, after updating to Dapper, the Broadcom Extreme 2 card is now working, so I have every piece of hardware in that machine is working now, which is nice.
Cool.
That's cool.
So I have wireless connectivity through the Apple's AirPort 2, the Broadcom Extreme card. So kudos to those people, to those guys who developed that. It's kind of like NDS Wrapper. It uses the Apple drivers to extract the firmware files. It's really easy to do, but you have to be running like the latest kernels,
of which you're always running the latest kernels. So
I'm not as anal as I used to be about that.
Is there a time that Dan does not run the most current kernel? Come on. Never.
The nightly upgrades Dan gets.
No, it's not nightly. It's every Wednesday night.
Yeah, every Wednesday night at 8:15.
Although lately it's been every Wednesday night we've been fighting with the setup. He doesn't have time to download a new kernel.
But now, speaking of new distributions and the Fedora and stuff like that, I did, well, it wasn't really new, but it was new to me. I got a few minutes today to play around with the VMware player, you know?
Right.
And I finally figured this is like a preview for those of you who actually read my blog, which will get updated with this later. But what I did was I finally got it installed and running on Ubuntu, which I was having a hell of a hard time with a few weeks back when everybody else thought it was cool. So I finally figured out how to get it installed and running on Ubuntu, and I tried out like a damn small Linux image underneath it. I got the virtual machine that does nothing but like boots live CDs, you know. So I tried out damn small Linux under it. I tried out the new Canopix under it, and I tried out Slax and FreeBSD, and I really impressed. You know, see, huge memory hog, of course, but it was really, really quite cool, especially the damn small Linux under there and a virtual machine. That's the stuff, man. I'm telling you. Anyway, I got cool little screenshots and stuff like that that I'm going to post on my weblog later. But if you haven't tried this yet, definitely try it out. I think that's the neatest thing. I only wish that I had, like, a decent Windows image to use at work with just a couple of apps that they need on the floor. And then, you know, maybe that would be enough to cut some people off of Windows and stick them back on the Linux where they belong.
There you go.
So the Linux World Expo, in your opinions, who receives best in show, and who receives worst in show? The AKA Flaming Vista Turd Award.
I hands down worst in show slash dot pavilion.
Me too, man. Slash dot. Shame on those guys,
nope.
Man.
Nope. I don't think slash dot gets it. They don't get the worst one.
No, because it's just a lounge.
Now, like, you guys keep mentioning that they were using XP and slash dot. I didn't see them using XP. I saw them using a Macintosh that they were using they were using Microsoft Office software on it for their PowerPoint presentations and stuff. And now that's pretty bad, right? But I never saw them use XP at all. I saw them use Macs. I saw them use the Xbox, which is pretty bad, too. But right next to them was,
yeah, I got a kick out of watching that.
It wasn't SourceForge yet. Who the hell was it?
Not Sugar CRM. Sugar.
Sugar CRM.
Was it SugarForge or something?
SugarForge,
like that?
That's right.
No, it wasn't Sugar CRM.
No, it was SugarForge.
No, it was like, okay. SugarForge, I think. Now, right.
All right.
SugarForge, which is like two booths down from them, had this gigantic 40-inch flat screen television or monitor or whatever, high def. You know, pretty looking thing. They were using XP, and all day long it was glaring at me, right?
Yeah.
You look over there, and there's the freaking XP logo that takes like 45 minutes to boot up, and you see the little XP icon down at the bottom of the screen and shit like that. That was the one that I'm saying gets the Golden Turd Award for using,
Alan, what do you
XP
think?
The entire time.
Wait a second, Pat.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that one.
Pat. Did you actually see XP booting up on the slash dot?
Because
I'm sitting
at some point, yeah.
I did not see XP. I saw, specifically, I saw them using Macintosh, and they were
Macintosh
running PowerPoint on it.
You know, because I'm wondering, and now you got me second guessing myself, Link, because I know I saw the PowerPoint, and I could have sworn I saw an XP boot window on there. Like when it's first starting up, you got that XP screen. And before you get to the login screen, I could have sworn I saw that. But then again, I could have been so infuriated by it, I could have been just confusing the SugarForge with the
like I said, I don't know if they actually did ever use it or not, but I'm absolutely positive that I did not see them use it. But I did see them use, you know, they were using Microsoft Office on OS X.
Well, it's kind of.
I'm 100% positive that the SugarForge guys down there were sporting that big old ass XP monitor going out.
It's too bad the Unisys booth that caught on fire, the big sign that they had up there, didn't tip over and, you know, just like miss the free NetBSD guys and just crash right across the the SourceForge Pavilion into the Sugar Forge Pavilion booth.
The fire was best of show, I think. Between it's a toss up, and it's a hard toss up because it's either the fire or that lady passing out. We really didn't top that.
I say we say that corner gets best of show, right?
Yeah,
because that encompasses the fire and the lady passing out in the middle of the floor and stuff.
We were never really able to like beat the first day. I thought it was
Novell wins for me in my book. They're doing awesome stuff, man.
I hear another Sousa whore coming on soon.
I'm going to go out and buy it, man. I'm making a pledge right now. I'm going to go out and buy the box version when 10.1 is released. It'll be my first actual box version of Linux since Red Hat 6.1.
Wow.
I want to support a company that's going out there and doing it for Linux. And those guys are doing it for Linux, and I'm going to show my support by buying a box.
Now, I just, past couple of days, I listened to all the interviews and all the stuff we recorded from the show, and one thing that I recall hearing from the show over and over again, and Jeremy Garcia had said it at our dinner discussion, that if Linux is going to gain any mainstream acceptance, we're going to have to sacrifice some of what has gotten us here today, and it seems like the big thing that we're going to see being sacrificed is choice.
Yeah. I agree. It's a shame, you know. We talk about KDE, man. I like KDE. It's my favorite desktop, but you know, it might disappear. You know, I mean, somebody will still run it, but it won't be the default desktop for all the different distributions. You know, it seems like GNOME is getting the inside track on that. You know, all the commercial vendors, that's what they're supporting and pushing.
Yeah, but here's the thing, right? Like, do we really have to sacrifice everything just to standardize on things? I don't think we do. We don't have to sacrifice our choice in order to agree on a standard. So what if we all agree that, that TWM is the best window manager, and that's the one that everybody should standardize on? When you boot up a Linux distribution, it goes to TWM, and that's it. Great, that's fantastic. If we all pick a standard, then everybody can, you know, that's what we can teach the new people. We can teach them that standard, but that doesn't mean that we can't have other choices for the rest of us. So what if it boots in a TWM? We want to run KDE. We just, you know, hit the config file and tell it to run KDE, you know, for the rest of us.
No, I understand.
Or GNOME or whatever.
I agree with what you're saying, and it's not that they're taking out, you know, the capability of running those other... You know, the other software, particularly we're talking about window managers, desktop environments, and it seems like they're actually, that Fedora, I don't know about Fedora, but SUSE has moved the KDE into more of the community repository there, and is kind of moving away towards their own development and support of KDE to have the community take it over. And it's not that it's going to go away, so to speak, but I'm concerned that where you had the vendors, the major vendors, maybe contributing to the development of those projects, they may be pulling away from that and supporting, you know, just specific ones that they have determined are the what the mainstream desires in Linux.
Yeah.
And of course, people will argue with what I just said there, but I kind of got wind through hearing what other people were saying in conversations that were going on the periphery that might be the case.
You got wind from your lunch.
Yeah, that might be the case that...
I was just going to say something like that.
It might be the case that eventually,
you know.
SUSE is not going to be... Okay, it's going to be primarily a GNOME distribution.
Right.
And it's kind of weird because like Zeus has always been associated with KDE.
Right.
Yeah. Like I said, that doesn't mean that we have to sacrifice choice, though. We can still have the projects running in the background that we can select at our leisure.
Sure, sure. You know, if someone in my company says to me, you know, we're going to install, you know, SUSE with GNOME as the default desktop or Red Hat with GNOME as the default desktop, I wouldn't have a problem with it, man, at work, honestly. You know,
yeah.
I can do whatever I want on my own machines, you know.
Sure. Sure. That, you know, that doesn't, it doesn't have to stifle innovation, I guess. That's what I'm getting at.
Now,
but it would be a really good standing point, or a really good point to get people transferred over from, you know, the evil other operating systems.
You know, listening to some of the interviews, I'm going through the you know, going through them and doing the transcripts of them, you know, the indexes, and the interview with Steve Alon Nichols, man, was hysterical. He made some really funny points and really good points, man. You know, there's an opportunity coming up, not so much with the home user. Because, you know, even if Vista is a piece of crap, they'll still ship, you know, 30, 40 million whatever desktops, just for the simple fact that people at Christmas time go out and buy boxes. But the opportunity is with the business desktop for machines that are fairly new, you know, a couple of years old. You know, to me, that's where the real opportunity lies.
Yes, I believe that's true, and I also really enjoyed talking with Stephen Von Nichols. He's a funny guy. Actually, all of our interviews were really great this time. You know what I mean? We didn't run into anything that was lame or any weirdo people at all. Everybody was really cool and you know, especially all the Novell guys that just kept coming around and making sure that we were hooked up with quality people to talk to. That was really cool.
Yeah, Miguel, even after we told him, he came by the booth a couple times.
Yeah, right. He kept coming by, right. And all you guys that are listening should have seen Pat, man. Pat is like the consummate salesman, jumping over the freaking, jumping over the front of the booth and grabbing people and sticking DVDs and CDs in their hands. It was hysterical.
Funny you say that, man.
One
I hate freaking sales.
One step short of assaulting people sometimes.
No shit.
You, have you heard of us? No, no. Don't go away.
Come back.
Heaven forbid you say no, right? Have you heard of us? No. Oh, well, then come over here. You know.
So I guess you guys want to play the interview with Nat. That's something new. We haven't heard that yet.
You think we can get away with doing that? Can't get away with doing that, Dan, or we're going to wreck everything. We play the interview now.
No, I just turn off the asterisks.
Dan's compiling his kernel.
You hear the keys clicking, being hit in the background.
You hear the clicking in the background, right? Click, 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 click.
How long the interview? The interview's about a half hour, right?
I have no idea. Right. I didn't look at
about
it.
About a half hour.
Well, you know, that's the thing.
Minutes,
after the interview, are we going to even bother getting back on?
We can talk for a few minutes.
Are you other two guys going to go on?
He passed Alan's bedtime. He'll be a pumpkin by then.
He'll be a pumpkin.
Well, I won't be up too much later, but...
I'll jump back on.
Although, on a side thing, I got to re-record that thing tonight, like, for the CGT show. It seems the stream I gave you is a day behind. So I got to redo that tonight.
Well, make sure you do it, man.
Yep, I'm going to fire it up at 11 o'clock.
We got to let everybody know what the hell we're talking about, though, right?
Oh, yeah, this is a live show. Well, it's actually not live since now they're a day behind. It was a live show if they had played it right yesterday by California Guitar Trio, which is a really cool guitar band. Do some really interesting guitar work if anybody's interested on it. It's on a program called Echoes, which is like an NPR type program. You can dig it up off NPR. Excuse me?
How appropriate, Echoes.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Actually, it's sort of a weird. Yeah, I know. It's a good one for tonight. But it's a good show. On it, or at least the band is good. I don't know about the rest of the show. I haven't really listened too much to that because it's usually on far after I go to bed. So.
You gonna pop the URL into the chat for that?
Oh, yeah. Dig it up. I have to dig it up here. Hold on, give me a second. I gotta go to my dear old Gmail and get the URL.
Alan kills the show.
Brings
How
the
did I kill the show? Blah. I was asking.
Empty space. Dead air.
Alan, man, he was talking.
Alan was actually...
That never happens.
He was very sociable, actually, Alan.
I
jumped in
there,
man. He had to pick up the slack, you know. When we were, like, busy doing other things, Alan jumped right in, man.
Yeah.
Kept everybody occupied.
I was listening to the audio and trying to keep that so it sounded decent. And that, by the way, is why you don't hear me interviewing people, because I'm back on the freaking mixer. Dan and Pat are, like, cranking out questions to all these people, and Alan is man in the booth, man. You should have seen him.
It's
like
my
Frankenstein,
best.
Scaring everybody into taking CDs.
He scared so many, all the CDs were gone the first day.
Yeah.
That first day was just crazy, man. It was just a blur.
Went really fast.
I talked with Droops last night.
Oh, yeah? How's he doing?
He's doing good. We should give some thought into heading out to Hope in July. It's a convention put on,
okay,
I think.
What does Hope stand for?
I believe it's put on by the 2600 groups.
Where are they having that?
It's in New York.
That would be cool.
New York at the
Pennsylvania Hotel, isn't it? Pennsylvania.
Oh, I know where that is. I used to work right down the street from there. Yeah, we can go to that, man.
Yeah,
going for the day and stuff, hang out with them. I'll be into that.
We could do that one for sure.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'll tell you where it is. Hope is at New York City, Hotel Pennsylvania, July 21st, 22nd, and 23rd.
Yeah, we could do that.
He is also...
What is it, just demonstrations and stuff and talks?
Yeah, it's... The Hope conferences have been running since 1994. Hope stands for Hackers on Planet Earth, and it has been the gathering point for thousands of computer hackers, phone freaks, and net activists, government spooks, and a whole lot of curious people from all corners of the globe. This will be the sixth one, and we expect to continue to grow and have more imaginative events, cool speakers, and fun projects than ever before.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, Jella Biafra did the keynote speech of that. It was pretty funny. For those of you who remember the Dead Kennedys.
I remember the Dead Kennedys.
He did a really interesting keynote speech. He just rambles. He's funny to listen to. Anyway, I posted that stream up to the link to the stream up there. It starts at 11 o'clock. If anybody's into it, if you're not, you're not.
So you're telling them to leave our show, which might be streaming past 11, to go listen to somebody else.
Well, we're normally off at 10:30.
You know what bumps me out when I missed the Kevin Carmody interview. And
I actually wanted to go see that the keynote.
Dude, you were there.
Yeah, but we were busy setting up.
No, but you were there.
Oh no, I'm sorry. I'm listening to. I'm thinking of something else.
Yeah, I'm talking about the interview that Pat did, which you did a great job. I want to ask him what the hell's going on with InView.
What is going on with InView?
Well, there hasn't been like any real development on that for almost a year now. Are they dropping it?
Well, I asked him about when they're coming out with the new version of Linspire because it's been over a year already.
Right.
He was saying that a new version's coming out, but it doesn't sound like a major version. It just sounds like an update version.
Right, the 5.1, okay. But they said 6.0 is like another couple months off.
I know their desktop Linux summit is coming up in a couple weeks, and he was alluding to that they're going to make a really big announcement there, so I'm curious to find out exactly what he's talking about.
What do you think, Pat? What do you speculate it's going to be?
I think it's going to be some kind of a deal with Ubuntu where they're going to do some kind of a click-and-run deal with them.
You think?
Yeah.
You think it's going to be that? You think it's going to be codec support or maybe a video editing software?
You know, Miguel was saying that they were talking to Kevin Carmody and everything.
Uh-huh.
It's like he's interested in what's going on with Banshee and D.Va and those things. And Stephen Vaughn Nichols also mentioned that, too, that he was talking to the Novell people. So it sounds like there is communication going across, which is a good thing. Who knows? Maybe it is some kind of licensing, codec licensing agreement where you can go out and buy some, you know, some codec for $10 and be quote-unquote legal. That would be cool. I would do it.
Yeah. It's got some potential.
I don't know. The way he was talking, it sounds like it's going to be a big deal. So we'll see how big it is.
Linspire. Running on Windows XP.
What do you mean?
Deporting it to Windows.
What, Linspire?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're going to use an NT kernel. Nah, they would do that. That was that was
dry humor of Dan's that's getting everybody. That's
the Linspire stuff, that was a really good interview. That was pretty cool. And I really wish we could go out to the Desktop Summit.
Yeah, San Diego's nice, man.
All right, so any last words before we play the Nat Friedman interview?
Yeah, it's a good interview with Nat, as always. You know, the Novell guys are very accessible, very humble people, man. Very cool guys. You know, you see them walking around, you go up to them and you talk to them. Cool guys, man.
Great, so we're ready?
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
I'm going to jump off. I'll come back in about a half hour, okay?
Oh, yeah.
I'll give a listen on the stream.
I'm going to turn off the asterisks on mine so I don't interfere with the playback of this.
And, okay.
So I'll come back on when it's over.
When it comes back, just start talking and we'll jump on.
All right.
Talk to you in a bit. Bye.
All right, so those guys are gone. And here's Nat Friedman. Enjoy.
Hi, this is Pat from the Linux Link Tech Show, and we are here with Nat Friedman from Novell.
Hi, Pat.
Hello, everybody.
It's good to see you, too.
It's been a year.
I remember we were eating milk and cookies together a year
yes,
ago.
Yes, and talking about Fight Club.
I don't remember that, but I remember eating milk and cookies.
Yes. A lot's happened in a year.
Uh-huh. It's true. Yep. I'm Natalie now, for example.
So you like your dress.
Yeah, you like my dress? And, Linux. I hear it's getting big.
So what exciting things have happened in the year since we've talked to you?
I mean, a year ago we were talking about XGL, I think, and FSpot and some other things like that that were under development. And basically, what's exciting now is that we're about to put all this into a product and release it and put it in people's hands. And to me, over the last year, I mean, working on Banshee, FSpot, XGL, the OpenOffice stuff we've done in terms of Microsoft VBA macro support, data pilot support for Excel pivot tables, all this stuff. I mean, there's any one of these things individually is pretty interesting, but all of this coming together at one time in a product. Where's my laptop? Sorry about that. Okay, I thought somebody walked off with my laptop. All of this coming together in a product at one time, it's like it's a coordinated assault on the Linux desktop. And nothing like this has ever happened before. And I think now, finally, we're at a point where you can take one of these desktops, you put it in front of a regular person who doesn't know Linux from anything, and you know they try to use it for a few minutes, 10 minutes or so, and they come back to you and they'll say, you know, I can use this. I can. You know, we're hiring new people now at Novell who have never used Linux before, never seen it. You know, they're Macintosh users. They don't know what it is. They're sitting down and they use it 10 minutes later. They say, this is fantastic.
We've heard about all the usability studies that you've done.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. We collected thousands of hours of video. I mean, we built usability labs in Utah and in Cambridge here. We got one in our office, and we've got a steady stream of non-geeks flooding through the office. You know, we do this kind of like iterative testing with them where they come in and, you know, for example, Banshee. Aaron Bachover is the author of Banshee. And we flew him up from North Carolina. He came to the office for a week. And we did a week of iterative hardcore testing of Banshee whereby, you know, we bring in some users, five or six per day, and we test a different part of Banshee each day. And in the morning, we do all these tests. And then in the afternoon, Aaron would review the results and look over what crashed, what didn't work, where people got confused, look at the videos. And then that night, stay up all night, try to fix all those problems. Then in the morning, test the same things again. So by the end of the week, you've tested these things. You've iterated a few times. You can achieve, like, over the course of a week, major changes to the usability of an application in areas you didn't think were important. You know, like, I thought that would be obvious that you click on that to add a playlist, or you have to try.
It's not always obvious, though, to regular users who have no clue.
It's not. It's absolutely not. And frequently, Linux people don't even know regular users. You know, so like,
true.
Hey, we just know each other. You know, it's like, well, my geek friend Fred had no problem figuring out that you need to, you know, change the attribute on that window and right click to open the properties dialog. And that, you know, it's like, so you need to find regular people.
So when's the big release date for the next product?
August 47th. No, it's we don't have a public date right now, but it's coming soon. It's coming pretty soon. Next several months.
Okay.
With regards to the usability studies, when you first started doing this, was it a difficult transition from looking at this and saying, well, this looks obvious to us. This has always, you know, worked great. Here we have 90% of the people saying this sucks.
Yeah.
Has that been a hard hill to overcome for you or for certain people to say, well, you know, it's,
yeah, I mean,
it's ego, you know,
the thing is, if you just talk about it, it's hard. If I just say, listen, usability is about X, Y, and Z. You go on any of the Linux desktop mailing lists and you can find, like, all kinds of amateurs pontificating about what makes something usable, you know, and their opinions about what usability is. And, like, you know, I think usability is made of the following three factors in equal portions, you know, or whatever. Like, and it's like, no, it's not the following three factors in equal portions. This factor is more important. Yes. You can find, you know, just like reams of this dialogue. But if you actually just take people and you ask them to try to use an application, send an email, find a document on their disk, you know, anything like that, you record it, you watch the video, it's just, it's indisputable evidence. And you take this stuff and you put it in front of a hacker, and he's like, no, oh, all right, well, she couldn't figure that out. One of the things that was kind of cool I didn't expect is that there are situations in which something is usable, you can figure it out, but you're not happy about it, which doesn't make sense from an engineering mindset. It's like, well, if they accomplish the task that they set out to accomplish, they must be satisfied with the results, like this Vulcan way of thinking or whatever. But people are frequently, you know, like, you know, we would often say, okay, now you've created this document and you saved it and you closed the application. Now we'd like you to go find this document on the disk. And what we were trying to test was our Beagle, our search framework, and people would go to the search interface and type some keywords and then it would come up, or they would go file open and they'd use search from file open and they'd find it. But there's another alternative way to bring a document up that you've just saved, which is to go to the recent documents list in the file, in the file menu at the bottom, like in OpenOffice, right? Which is a completely reasonable way to do it. And in fact, it's familiar to people because Windows, you know, Microsoft Office does that, and lots of applications have done that in the past. But people would always say, you know, I know this isn't the way I'm supposed to do this. I know I'm cheating, but I'm gonna do this. It's like, well, you're not cheating. It's a reasonable way to do it. You got it done. But people would feel bad, you know. So frequently we found actually if there were multiple ways to accomplish a task, if there were too many ways to accomplish a task, people weren't sure, what's the one I'm supposed to do? What should I do? You know, I'm doing this wrong. Am I going to cause problems later? So there's the difference between sort of like just, you know, in a utilitarian way accomplishing a task and then feeling good about the way that you accomplish the task. These are kind of different, independent variables.
So you're trying to make people feel good about doing it.
Absolutely. I mean, this is why
feel
we did
good
XGL.
Desktop.
I mean, and probably everybody watching this show has seen the cube spinning by this point and has seen, you know, our scale plugin and so on. And you know, when we first started showing XGL, everyone's like, oh, wow, you know, this is nice. iCandy is a nice thing to have, but it's really not that useful. But, you know, we've been going to customers. We've been demoing Desktop 10. And we always include some effects as part of the demo. But it's just the minimize effect where, you know, a window kind of becomes translucent and then zooms down into the panel task list area and, like, kind of matches up with the little window list icon there. And the conversation is totally different when you include these. We actually did a test where we went out to some customers and we showed them Desktop without any XGL, and we showed it to them with XGL, you know, to a different set of customers. And the response is really different because people just feel better about a desktop that looks fun to use and fancy. You know, Don Norman wrote this book called Emotional Design. And part of the premise of this book is that things that are fun to use are easier to learn to use because you're more willing to spend time with them. So, that's sort of been a Bible for us, that book, and how we've done this.
You see, I downloaded Carrara, which is a live CD where you can check out some of those effects.
Okay.
You know, to me, as an experienced user, it's not that big of a deal. It doesn't really do much for me. But I could see where someone who's new to it, they're amazed by it.
I sit there on the airplane with my laptop, and like I'm, you know, flipping the cube, and I'm doing my work, and I got Emacs over here, and I got this thing over here, you know, emails on the other side, and like people are always like, the dude next to me is always like,
looking at his shoulder.
What is going on there? You know, hey, excuse me, man, what is that you're using? I'm using Linux, you know?
It's impressive. To someone who's
it's
not familiar
absolutely
with it.
Impressive, and it's fun. You know, it's nice. It's cool. And the other great thing is the way David Reedman, who's just unbelievably prolific and incredible developer, the way he wrote CompIz is it's got a plugin architecture in place. And each of the effects, actually most of the window manager functionality is written as a plugin. There's like 15 different plugins, including like a move, a resize plugin, minimize plugin, fade, all these different plugins. And each of them kind of plugs, they form a pipeline, which, you know, together kind of end up drawing the desktop. So anyone can write one of these Compass plugins, and we haven't done it yet, but we're going to launch a competition, you know, to who writes the most cool, crazy plugins. Yeah, best plugins and that kind of thing. That'll be neat. I mean, people should, they're relatively easy to write, so.
Cool stuff.
People should like that.
We were talking last night about wider.
Is this when you guys
adoption.
Were out drinking?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. About wider adoption of Linux on the desktop. And it seems, you know, some people think that in order to get wider adoption, you got to sacrifice a lot of the stuff that we hold dear towards Linux, like choice. And having multiple different desktops can become a problem, different libraries to develop in.
Right.
What's your opinion on that?
I don't know where this concept came that Linux is all about choice in every dimension. Like, you're right, it's a modular thing, and if you want to, you can replace your glibc with a different C library, which has a different memory alloc and different malloc implementation. Yeah, absolutely, it's open source, so you have the flexibility and control to do that. But from a consumer perspective, I don't see why that's what Linux has to be about. I think from a maker perspective, there are makers, you know, like this is culture of people who want to take things and pop the hood open and, like, you know, whatever, add a nitro booster to their engine. Yeah, that's, which is totally cool. I mean, you know, I think that's great. Obviously, that's like where we come from. That's kind of what we get off on. But that's not necessarily what everyone else will get off on when it, you know, when it comes to Linux. I think for some people, the fact that, you know, for like a $50 list price, you can buy, you know, and get support for an entire desktop environment with OpenOffice and everything, and, you know, great media support, and it's secure. You know, and it's an open platform. And if you don't like one vendor, you can switch to another vendor. I think that is that's a lot of value for some people. And that's different from me, right?
Right?
I mean, for me as just an end user or developer, I think it's great that if there's a problem in the software that I'm using, I can grab the source code within a few minutes. I can, you know, maybe hopefully figure out what I want to change or whatever. That's just a really different attitude. So I think, you know, what we Linux people need to do is just admit that there are people who are not like us who might want Linux for other reasons. So, you know, when it comes to what you just mentioned, though, which is, do we need a single set of developer APIs in order to attract a large number of developers? I mean, I think this is the great challenge that's going to face Linux next. You know, in the desktop now, with desktop 10, I think we've solved all the big problems. You know, it used to be sort of like, oh, well, if only we had a plug-and-play solution that sort of worked, so when you plug in a printer, something actually happened, you know. You know, in the past, you plug in, like, a digital camera to Linux, and it's like, okay, now open a terminal, now type dmessage, find out, you know, what kind of device was created for the camera. Okay, mount space slash dev slash HDE1 space slash media slash camera or whatever. Okay, now rsync your files off of it. You know, it's like, this is kind of how things were in the past. We solved that problem. We solved, like, these interoperability problems with OpenOffice and VBA macros. We've got for the first time in Banshee, a legal and open source music solution that's sort of like a one-stop user experience. There is no other tool that does this in Linux that's legal and an out-of-the-box media experience. So these things have been solved, and what's the last big question? Is if you need other applications, you know, if you need applications that are outside of these kind of core apps, of email and browser and calendar and office suite and photos and music and video. You know, if you need something outside of that range because it's like some kind of internally developed corporate app, then how are you going to get it on Linux? So that's what we, as, you know, the Linux industry, have as our next big challenge if we want to reach a lot of people, right? And if we have not one Linux API but 10 or 20 or 50 Linux APIs, and they don't work together, then bringing people to Linux becomes a complicated thing. So we're not bringing them to Linux, we're bringing them to Linux with this set of libraries, or Linux with that slightly, you know, permuted set of libraries. So, you know, so having one Linux, I think, is going to be important.
So you mentioned Banshee again.
Yeah.
And providing the only open source legal MP3 player.
Yeah, it's the only open source
that will play MP3s.
Yeah.
Are you guys looking towards other formats, particularly on the video codec side, being able to...
Yeah, we are, yeah.
That stuff?
So just so everybody understands, I want to just explain Banshee for a second, and kind of why it makes sense, if you don't mind. Because what I wanted to do was, you know, in the past, like, if you get Red Hat or Fedora or whatever, you get Aug Theora and Aug Vorbis support, And everything else is up to you, you know. And typically people go out and they download some unofficial, unsupported RPM from some non-sanctioned website that has the MP3, you know, whatever, the Zing encoder or something like that, and decoder is built. And you install it, and then XMMS works with your, you know, you can play MP3s. But it's not an out-of-the-box experience. It's not something you can sell to people. It's not something my sister would go anywhere near. So so we wanted to provide an out-of-the-box experience, and there were a bunch of players like Amarok and Rhythmbox and others out there, but there was kind of a combination of factors that two problems. One is that they were GPL'd, and once we acquired codec licenses, we weren't really 100% clear on the compatibility of the GPL with those licenses. So GPL player was a problem. Second problem was that they had multiple copyright holders. These were written by dozens of people, and no one had really kept track of who owned the copyright. So if we wanted to relicense Rhythmbox, for example, we'd have to contact all these copyright holders and try to get their approval to relicense it so that we could then link it. And what if we miss somebody, you know, in like a year from now, he's like, hey, I own that 7 lines of code, you're violating my rights, you know, or whatever. So we didn't want to do it. So we set out to write something new. We found Aaron Bachover, who's an amazing guy, and Banshee is completely X11 licensed, clean copyright ownership. So that's great. And then we formed a partnership with Real Networks, who through the Helix framework provide us with MP3 decoding, MP3 encoding, and AAC decoding, which is really nice to have. So that's why Banshee can do all that stuff. and it is, you know, I think it's the only thing that can do that right now. So that's great. Now, you asked about video.
Right.
If you were to write like a spider that were to go out and crawl the internet and find, you know, all the different video files that are online or whatever, I think you find that like at the top is WMV.
Right.
And somewhere after that, MPEG-4 is rising pretty fast because all those digital cameras record MPEG-4 now, so self-produced content is coming out in MPEG-4. And then QuickTime is somewhere number three or something like that. And really the main reason people want QuickTime is because of apple.com/trailers, you know, that website with all the
right.
Music trailers. So if we can get those, you know, studios to produce the video, you know, the trailers in like real video or something, that would be nice. I actually don't. I think Real Video is number three, QuickTime's number four. It's something like that. But WMV is clearly really important. And so we've already sort of demonstrated our ability to solve the simultaneous equations of technical, legal, and business problems with music. So we're doing the same thing with video. So I'll just say, stay tuned. We don't have an announcement yet.
Yeah, we talked to Miguel yesterday. He mentioned Diva.
Diva's amazing. I mean, if people haven't seen, I don't know if you guys can provide URLs or whatever associated with the show, but if you haven't seen Diva videos yet, you've got to see them.
Do you have a URL? You can just...
I don't know it offhand, okay. But I can send it to you guys.
Email it to us, we'll put it up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Diva's amazing. I mean, it's just this... I don't know the guy's name. I just know him by his initials and his email, MDK. Anyway, this guy is amazing. He's written, you know, with Mono, he's built single-handedly this complete video editing package. It's not only your video editor. It's extremely easy to use, and the UI is gorgeous. I mean, and, you know, it's clearly not in, like, a stable release state yet, but I'm pretty excited, you know, about what's coming there.
When's it going to be in a stable release or a beta release?
I don't know. I mean, maybe. I'd say this year.
All right. I mean, I'm looking forward to that.
You
got to
see that thing. Have you seen it? Did Miguel show you that?
I've seen bits and pieces of it.
Yeah.
Play with video occasionally.
Yeah. We use a lot with Kino, and
nice.
It's a little bit of Cinelera. But, you know, we're looking, always looking for the next video app that's going to make it the iMovie of Linux.
I think Diva's it. I mean, Diva just looks fantastic.
Now, is Diva going to support MPEG-4 encoding?
So the question is, once you have the implementation of a movie editor, then, again, you have a whole new set of codec problems. You know, you don't have to be able to decode video. You have to be able to encode video suddenly. Or something. So how do you do that? Yeah, you know, I don't know how we'll do that yet. You know, same approach.
Uh-huh.
Find a partner. Make sure the licenses are appropriate. You know, get it done.
Because, honestly, that is a nightmare, that whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, where I work, we're also getting into video streaming and offering downloads of videos. And just to find a format that everybody can play. Like, Windows Media Player can't play QuickTime.
Use Flash.
Well, Flash, but
there's one operating system that really can't do Flash well. That's Linux on PPC.
Yeah.
So, you know, we want to cover as much people
as we can. Macromedia, are you listening to this right now? We need Flash on PPC.
Well, you know, another problem with Flash is my kids are going out to websites now. My wife's going out to websites, and Flash version 8 is required. But they're not going to produce a player for Linux until 8.5, they said. So now that...
That's annoying.
It is. It's very annoying.
Yeah.
And it's just a bummer.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that yet.
It makes my kids cry.
Yeah.
That's not good. SesameStreet.org.
Yeah. So it's...
Do they still have Mr. Snuffleupagus on Sesame Street? Because he was sort of like... Because I always liked Mr. Snuffleupagus, but he was always like the secret friend.
Yeah. You know?
And
that's dangerous.
Mr. Snuffleupagus is out in the open now. He has been for the last 4 or 5 years.
Everyone knows
Everybody knows about him now.
Which is, I guess, kind of safer, probably, but...
You don't want the kids with the secret
You don't want the kid to think, like, I got a secret friend. I'm just like Mr. Snuffleupagus.
Do they even make new episodes of Sesame Street?
Yes, they do.
They still are?
I mean, I'm 36 years old, and that's when Sesame Street came out.
Yeah.
And I got a 2-year-old son, and he's watching new episodes of Sesame Street.
You're kidding. I heard Reading Rainbow went off the air. Is that true?
That's more your
story. Well... Yeah.
That was Jordy LaForge, man. That was awesome. He hosted Reading Rainbow.
Oh, yeah, that's been off for a while. Oh, and they don't do Electric Company anymore either.
Now. Zoom was the other one. I think that came back.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. You bunch
Zoom?
Of old farts.
what was that one with Gary Gnu?
Oh, this Great Space Coaster.
Great Space Coaster.
I don't remember
After
that.
After your time.
No.
Before your time.
I was in diapers.
Before your time. Yeah.
But Jordy LaForge raised me on Reading Rainbow.
Was he also on the...
He always wore that hairband over his eyes.
Yeah.
Remember that thing?
Wasn't he on 3-2-1 Contact also?
I don't think so.
No?
I know he was in Roots, Kota Kinte.
Okay, but that's not a child's
no, <it's> not.
education show. Yeah, that was a miniseries, wasn't it?
Yeah,
about
Taylor's book. He made it into a miniseries.
Slavery.
Back in the late 70s.
The United States and the whole...
Now that we're all completely off
Yeah,
topic.
Well... Hey, but it's off video.
Yeah, that's true.
So you... I hear a lot of really great things about SUSE 10. And... I mean,
all true.
And we had this one guy that we talked with, and he is just... He's saying that this is the best thing since sliced bread that he's ever seen.
Nice.
That you got... He said that you guys have improved the speed on it. I noticed when I've used SUSE in the past, it's a great distribution. That's been a little pokey for my taste. Hmm. And he's saying, no more.
Yeah, I don't think... I mean, we've improved boot speed a lot. We've improved login speed. Federico Mena Quintero has been doing just incredible profiling work across the desktop lately. He produces these, like, huge images that, you know, like, color code each, you know, line of sort of, like, the workflows, you know, for login and so on. It's, you know, it's just incredible kind of inspirational work that he's doing in profiling. He's, like, there's this sort of set of Federico followers now who, like... Oh, I want to use Federico's tools and profile something, and you know, be like his sort of measured approach to things, which is really awesome. So yeah, there's been a lot of speed improvements, I think.
Now, did Novell announce any big events or something,
well,
or any big releases?
Just had BrainShare.
I mean, big releases at this Linux World Expo or any big important news?
We're announcing the Mono 1.2 beta,
okay.
Which I guess you talked to Miguel about already.
Right.
Yeah, so that's good. And then the iFolder Enterprise server we open sourced on Friday.
Okay.
So that's pretty sweet. So basically, the entire iFolder stack is now open source. You can set up your own iFolder sharing server, and if you go to iFolder.com, you can grab we have some binaries there.
Yeah. Now, last year, you announced Hula.
Mm-hmm.
How's that been going? What's up with Hula?
Hula's good. I mean, the Hula development is has been. I mean, there was sort of like we had like this real big spike of interest in porting and other things like that at the beginning, and we have. Now Hula running at lots of sites. If you look on the mailing list, the Hula dev list, there's a lot of people who are running Hula internally. We've got some hospitals running it. You know, so there's been a lot of pickup and interest on Linux, which is really great. The team is working really on the user experience right now. And, you know, if you kind of poke around CVS, you can find some interesting clues of what's coming. I mean, I kind of don't want to... I mean, you know, if you dig in there, you can kind of find some stuff, but I don't want to reveal everything now. But there's some really cool stuff. We have, like... text messaging, SMS interface to your calendar, and some other stuff like that. It's pretty neat.
Now, has Hula become part of the Novell app or server suite yet?
No, not yet. No.
Will
it's not a release product yet.
No, so, do you think it will become a release product for that?
It will become a release product, and I think we'll probably ship it as a standalone product.
And would that be something that replaces GroupWise or as a...
No, it's a compliment. I mean, you know, GroupWise has a very important role. It's like there's a big following of GroupWise among people who need really high-function collaboration, mm-hmm. you know, who need to do a lot of, like, really tightly coupled collaboration. We think of Hula more for people who don't know each other, you know, like loosely coupled individuals working together. So it's a different role. But we find in some cases in which you have, like, you know, a company of 50,000 people and 10,000 of them use GroupWise and then 40,000 will use Netmail or Hula. So, for example, airlines, you know, you'll find that, like, the people who work in the office at the airline are all kind of sitting there using GroupWise, whereas the bag throwers and the stewardesses and all the people who kind of are more mobile, we need a lighter weight collaboration solution, so they use Hula.
All right. So what's on your agenda, then?
My agenda?
Yeah, you got any big plans?
Yeah, just, you know, chilling.
Chilling.
No big plans. We're just trying to fix bugs in 10.
Uh-huh.
We should have some cookies. I think you're right. I like oatmeal raisins.
These guys were supposed to bring the cookies, so they dropped the ball.
I'm good.
Do you have any questions for us?
I'm wondering what kind of car I should get. I'm thinking about getting a convertible. So if anybody has any advice.
Pat?
I don't have any money, man. I'm married and I got a kid. So.
I didn't say an expensive car.
Well, just
I want a piece
convertible.
Of junk for the summer. Yeah.
Something
without a top
for
on
the
it.
Summer.
It's like a car that the top fell off. That would be perfect.
Well, you should be able to rip the top off yourself, right?
Yeah, you're
driving
probably
around.
Right. Yeah.
Well, you can build
the Linux way is for you to modify your own car, right?
It's true.
So you get it, or you can build.
No,
your
I think
own
the
car.
Linux way is you find a car on the street and you take it and modify it.
There you go.
That's what I keep hoping. I go to the airport, you know, and I like travel for 2 weeks and I leave my car like at the park. I keep coming back hoping they've pimped my ride. But it hasn't happened
They'll
yet.
De-pimp your ride for you.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I want to thank you for coming on and talking
Thanks.
To us
yeah,
again
it's always
this year.
Good to talk to you guys.
Great stuff, and I look forward to it.
Cool.
To the XGL.
Yeah, everybody go to OpenSUSE.org and grab the latest version of OpenSUSE. You can see a lot of the stuff I've been talking about, Beagle, XGL, FSpot, Banshee. It's all in there. And, of course, SUSE Linux Enterprise Desktop 10, which we call Desktop 10 because you can't say Sled 10 because Sled means prostitute in Dutch.
All but, right.
And then you make jokes about volume licensing and stuff like that. But Desktop 10 is the sort of like the enterprise product you can tell your boss to buy. Desktop 10, the big bang is coming this summer. It's coming this summer.
Now, if you wanted to go out and buy a copy of SUSE this summer, is it going to be about, what, $50 or so?
For Desktop 10 or Desktop 9, our list price was $50.
Okay.
So we haven't announced pricing yet for 10, but...
All right. Now, is that... That's just for the whatever the regular version, right? There isn't different versions of that, is there?
No, it's just one version. It's just one version.
Okay.
And you're going to get all the media. Everything's going to be in there.
Okay. And that has a DVD player? Legal DVD player in it yet?
No DVD announcements yet.
Oh, okay. Yet.
DivaProject.org. Diva-project, DIVA-project.org if you want to see the Diva video stuff, which is a must-see.
Oh, yeah. We'll definitely be checking that out. Oh, thank you very much.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It.
Good to see you guys. All right.
And that was Nat Friedman, everybody. Good stuff. Good stuff. Let me get those other weenie heads on. But
what's happening?
Hey. Obviously, the interview's over.
Obviously.
And that's what's happening.
Good interview.
Yeah, it was great. I really enjoyed talking to Nat, and I hope we can make that a regular thing.
Yeah, it looks like we are making it a regular thing. I hope it continues.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, they were talking about bringing Linux World back to New York. I wouldn't have a problem with that. That means I'd be able to sleep in my own bed every night.
I don't know if I'd want to commute back and forth. But you're used to that.
Yeah, it wouldn't be that bad.
The only downside to that is it's going to run like, I don't know. Well, I guess parking wouldn't be so much an issue. It's still going to run us.
Hell, we could drive to Staten Island and take public transportation. In.
There we
or,
go.
You know, or even in Jersey somewhere.
Drive to, if you're talking about going to New York, drive to Somerville and then take New Jersey Transit up.
There you go.
There you go.
Or Newark and take New Jersey Transit in.
We could take a bus.
No, man.
No,
no.
The train is.
You want to jump
fun.
On a PATH train?
Where do you catch
you
a PATH train around here?
What's that?
Where do you catch a PATH train around
Newark.
Here?
You gotta be in Jersey.
Oh, that doesn't do much.
It's like Newark.
Newark, yeah, that's one place. Hoboken, there's a few other places. Jersey City.
So what was Kathleen's real name?
I forget who that was.
That was a trip, man.
Pretty funny stuff.
Yeah, it was.
How old was he, 16?
Yep. He had to get somebody, he had a woman to get him in under her name.
Funny shit.
So
Dan, you were checking out the new version of No Meaning. What is it called now? Akiga,
yes.
It's nice?
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, it was. Last night I fired it up and it looked pretty cool, and I called my mom on it and it was perfect. And then,
Did they charge you extra for that, or?
No. I just connected right to our SIP phone here, our Asterisk account.
Oh, you connected to the Asterisk server?
Right. And then
let me ask you.
Huh?
Can you do a direct person-to-person call with that directly without going through, let's say, a VoIP provider?
I don't know. It's a good question.
Yeah.
I didn't look too deeply into
the
it.
Server?
What kind of codecs does it support, Dan?
SIP and H.26, what is it, H.263?
H.263, yeah.
And I don't know. It's in the latest Linux Journal.
I installed Gizmo. There's a package for Ubuntu. Or Ubuntu, I'm sorry. The only problem is I could not get it to work with my Logitech headset. There's a how-to if you go into their documentation on how to get it to work. I tried all the different documentation, all the different things they recommend, and I just couldn't get it to work with the headset. So it looks like a nice program, but I couldn't use it.
Now, did you hear anything at all through it?
Yeah.
Because when I tried Gizmo on Arch, and when I bring it up, the audio is horrible.
Really?
It's like all stuttery.
Yeah,
like
how on Skype you can call the echo test. I did the same thing, and it sounded fine.
No, see, my echo test, terrible. I tried it over here on OS X, no problem at all. But on Arch, it was like.
Really?
Yeah.
In Ubuntu, the packages work fine. Now, only if I can get my headset to work with it, I'd actually use it.
Was there a native package for Ubuntu?
Yes, there is.
See, I doubt there's a native package for PPC Ubuntu, though.
Probably not. But who's running PPC anymore, huh?
Me.
Come on.
All the cool people are. You know, it sucks because The actual hardware support now is really, really going great. And there's like a whole lot of packages that really work well. But there's just those fundamental things that don't work. Like Flash, no. Certain video codecs don't work. You know, and then like Skype wouldn't work on there. I'm not sure if the SIP phones that I have work on there either. Maybe Akiga will. But hey, all that matters is the Airport 2 card's now working.
Yeah, that's a big deal, man.
Yeehaw.
Woohoo!
Most important.
Oh, Pat, you would have been proud, man. Last night at the meeting, Mark Stanley was talking about his job, and then somehow it got derailed on the Apple, and he went off on a tirade against Steve Jobs and Apple for like 3 or 4 minutes. That would have made you cry.
Should have recorded it, man. Actually, I should have been there, man.
You should have.
I should have, but I've been really busy since I've been home.
But, yeah. Yeah, good stuff.
What was his point? What was he ragging on Apple?
You know what? He just absolutely despises Apple and their philosophy and everything they've done and stealing from the BSD community and not giving back and how Steve Jobs is worse than...
You know what, the BSD guys, man? That they got their license and now they got to live with it.
But
they're okay with it. I'm okay with it.
So now you're an Apple apologist now. Pat has been converted.
No, I would never buy an Apple computer.
I don't see anything from the BSD community. I don't see anything BSD-ish about Apple OS X whatsoever. So.
Hey, what happened to your volume there, Link?
I don't know. I haven't changed anything. I'm still sitting here in the same spot.
Maybe that's a little better there. Yeah, about the only thing I have a problem with on my PPC hardware-wise is audio. Like, playback on that is volume. Sometimes it works great, sometimes it doesn't. Well, that's it. Any last words?
Oh, shit happens.
Thanks for listening.
Yep.
We have some...
this has been episode 404.
Yeah, Tech Show's 404 show.
And now we got all the problems ironed out, and it should be smooth for next time.
Yeah.
Until next week.
I'm with Link, man. I think we should break out the VoIP clients, the different machine. We could pick up a bare bones box for like $150.
What good is that going to do?
You won't be running your client on the same machine that you're recording.
I'm not running a client on the same machine that I'm recording.
No.
No.
What are you doing that VNC with it?
I will VNC into it when I'm over on the other side of the room. But no, I don't record on this machine. You can't
because...
The only
thing that machine...
Huh?
The only thing you're doing with that machine is recording, then.
No, the only thing I'm doing on this machine is doing on my main workstation is the VoIP client. On the PowerBook, it's the recording.
Okay.
And so
we don't need to get another machine, then.
And the problem that we had was, I guess coming down to... We figured that out was the FX, and it was feeding back. Which, no, the problem that we had, the main problem they had with the echoing seems to be with that version of Dynabolic and my hardware on the Dynabolic machine. But the problem that we had when we were talking and we started getting echo feedback is I think
monitor line.
When I adjusted the monitor line, I adjusted an FX line by mistake. And that's, I think, what the problem was. But now we know, and next time
we'll have it fixed.
Right, so. But it's odd because the Dynabolic thing.
We took notes, right?
The Dynabolic thing, I mean, it was running fine, and it only happened sporadically. So it was really odd. Oh. Anything else?
Thanks for listening.
Hey, Link. Oh,
cool. We're good, man.
Link.
And putting up with us this time.
Yeah.
What's the deal with Security Monkey?
We got to get him on.
When's he coming
on? Well, let's make some time for him, man.
And we have a promo tonight,
too,
to play.
Yeah, we can't invite, Security Monkey on the show and only give him 15 minutes to talk, man. We're going to want to talk with him, you know?
Who's our guest next week?
Hold on a second. I'll look. We got Jack Miller from FIS Open Source Student Information System. It's a education package that they got run on Linux. Well, we have an opening on May 10th. Want to pencil him in for the 10th, then?
I'll have to ask him and see.
Yeah. We got the 10th open, and we got the 24th open in May, so either one of those would work.
All right. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll get him on.
Yeehaw.
Anything else? We close up.
Play us out, man.
I'm going to play us out.
Good night, everybody.
Thank everybody for listening.
Put it on the website.
Good night, everybody.
Yay.
Good night, everybody, and thank you for coming here and enjoying the internets with us.
All right, I'm going to play these promos out so you guys aren't going to hear anything.
And enjoying the echoes with us.
The internets, yep.
Like free software? Better yet, like free software with the power to make it something different and better for everybody? Valid Syntax is a short 10-minute podcast looking at the status of open source projects as reported at SourceForge and FreshMeat and others you might find useful for any OS. Also, with your help, we'll spotlight on each show a project of the day, editorials, and possibly have a little fun along the way. So join me twice a week for all this and more at ValidSyntax.com. Remember, without valid syntax, you can't do anything.
Shut up.
Just shut up.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. It's over.
All right, it's over.
Well, the wheels fell off this episode.
That was what?
Well, the wheels fell off the bus.
Yeah. That's it.
Shit happens when you get dumb.
That's nice. Nice of Pat to point the finger right at me on the chat there. So warm.
Hey, Dan, when things go right, you get full credit.
That's
when when they go badly, you get full blame.
Right. I'm beat. I stayed up till 3 o'clock in the morning yesterday.
You're insane, man. I got up about an hour after you went to bed.
But when I was finished, I had wireless network connectivity.
Oh, you must have been excited.
So I was, but I couldn't use it. I had to go to bed.
Just long enough to connect.
To
right? You're like, oh, I got an IP address.
So what'd you have to do? You had to recompile the driver?
No, I had to update the Dapper so I can get the right kernel.
So there's a new version of the kernel that supported it?
Right. The module, you needed to have the Broadcom, the BCM43XX module, and that was not in the Breezy Bastard kernel. I don't see them upgrading to it in the near future, so I figured I'd just go to Dapper. I thought Dapper was already released, but apparently it's still in beta.
No, it's not. It's going to be beginning of June, which is actually good because we get to talk to Mark Shuttleworth like a week or two before it comes out.
That's nice. That is nice. The only thing I didn't like about the whole LWE thing and having a booth is couldn't get to any keynotes.
I know. I want to let's hear the Necroponi.
Yeah, that
kind
of sucked, didn't it?
What are you going to do? You can't get it all.
But, you know, we were pretty busy, though, so.
Now, I wonder if any of those keynotes are going to be podcasted by IT Conversations.
I don't think so. Those guys don't give a shit about Linux.
Yeah, they do. They do. They've done other Linux stuff.
Don't hold your breath.
Listen to you, Mr. Downer, over there. You're like
I don't give a shit.
You're listening to Bruce. You're like listening to whole Bruce Perens talk over there.
Yeah, you're a little down, Bruce.
It's not a matter of if. It's a matter of when the patent war is going to hit us.
Yeah.
Other people that whole business about. I think that Microsoft could put Linux out of business. Yeah, I don't believe that for a second either. But that's just my opinion.
You know, we didn't talk about.
Can you guys even hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We just ignore you.
All right, that's what I thought. I'll just shut up then.
But it would be interesting to talk about the whole hoopla around the boot camp.
Who cares, man?
I do.
Wake me up when it's over.
Because it's kind of interesting to wonder where OS Apple's going to go with this. I mean, they keep insisting that they're not going to ship Windows installed Apple systems, but I mean, why make a big deal of doing this? Why not just let it slip out and say, hey, that's fine? Why do a press conference if you don't have bigger plans for it?
Yeah, they're full of shit. We know that.
What do you think, Link?
I think that Apple is poising to put a big hurting on Microsoft. That's what I think. Because Apple traditionally has sexier looking computers. Okay, and let's face it, we like the way the Apple computers look. Everybody does.
They're good
computers. That doesn't make any difference. That doesn't make any difference to people who have money.
This is true.
They're good looking computers. Apple has a better reputation for keeping their systems not only running longer and better, but also having a better return on investment for their equipment. You know what I mean? They don't go out of like style out of fad so fast. So that's a bonus to a purchaser. And now you're going to be able to run XP on it if you want to. You know, there's another bonus. And then the next thing that's going to happen, you watch, mark my words, they're going to release OS 10 that'll run on any Intel computer. And that's just going to completely thump Microsoft.
What about the opposite? What do you think if Apple gets rid of OS 10 and starts running a version of XP on their machine?
They're not going to do that. They're going to make it possible to run XP on their existing machines, and they're going to port OS 10 for Intel over so that it'll run on any Intel machine. And
yeah, I agree with that.
Why do you think that? What if Apple does start selling machines with dual boot systems, both OS 10 and Windows, and then they notice that the market is purchasing these things and primarily using Windows on those operating systems? You know, are they?
I don't think that'll make a difference.
You don't think that'll make a difference?
Well, first of all, if they did sell computers with Windows on them, you're right. I believe they would sell them with Windows and OS 10 on them. But I don't think that's really in their best interest. I think that the marketing strategy here is going to be trying to get their hardware into people's homes because they could run OS or because they could run XP on it if they wanted to.
But
that's just going to familiarize people with Apple more, and once they're more familiar with Apple, they're going to release OS 10 for any regular Intel computer, and people are just going to, you know what I mean? There's going to be a significant portion of people that will migrate.
That's completely the opposite business model that Apple is. Apple's not a software company. They're a hardware company.
One of the things you may see is them making it so that you have the ability to run just Windows apps on the OS X. I think that would be very good too.
That might be too, yeah.
Because you get people who buy the OS X for the stability, but they still need to run that version of whatever Windows apps they need.
Well, I think that's why
it's sort of the best of both worlds.
You could run Windows on the Mac Intel.
Yeah.
So for those few things that you cannot run on OS 10 right now, you can just reboot your damn machine into Windows and run them.
But that's a nuisance.
Yeah, the convenience factor would be able to just be able to click on like a notepad and have it pop up running.
Right.
Or whatever program
but it's still going to enable people to transfer to Mac OS 10 easier. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, but I mean, but that might.
It's a familiarity issue.
That might prove to be a problem for people, because people who go and use the hardware might not bother even with OS 10. Because sure, I can run Windows on top of this great hardware, but if all my applications I run are in Windows and there's one or two that are pretty cool in OS 10, am I going to be spending the majority of my time in OS 10 or am I going to be spending the majority of my time in Windows?
But see, you're thinking that you have to spend a majority of your time in order to make a contribution. You don't. All you have to do is familiarize these people with OS 10. They don't have to completely convert over right away. It's like a sly move. Get people familiar a little bit here, a little bit there, get them using the Apple hardware, and then you release OS 10 that'll work on any any Intel machine, and you're going to get they're going to gain a significant portion of the market share back.
But again, that's contrary to Apple's business. It would be to Apple's disadvantage to do that.
I don't see where getting more money is to their disadvantage at all, because that's their bottom line.
But Apple's not a software company. They're a hardware company. I think they'd make more money. They would make more money dropping OS 10 and running Windows on top of their hardware.
No, because their hardware is damn near generic hardware now.
But it's
Apple hardware.
Generic hardware.
Apple isn't Right. Well, Apple is a hardware company or a software company.
To hell with you, Alan.
a company.
Good night, Alan.
I'm sorry, but 4:30 comes night, a little early in the morning.
Yeah.
Have a good one, everybody.
They're not just a hardware or software company. They're just a company, and the company's bottom line is to make money, and I think they're going to pursue that in whatever direction that takes them, you know?
I don't think anything Apple does, I don't see them getting 15 to 20% of the market share. I don't think it's
going to happen. They don't have to take 15 or 20%. They only have to get another 5 to make a huge dent. You know what I mean? It doesn't have to be a landslide event. It only has to be a big enough chunk to sway the tide a little bit.
Well, I don't see. Only time will tell. I mean, it would be interesting to see what their next move is going to be.
Yeah, it will. I'm interested to find out what's going to happen, actually. So.
But, I mean, that would be a completely evil combination there if they started shipping OS X systems with Windows on it.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I'm sorry, Apple systems with Windows.
Yeah, that would be evil.
Because the thing is, in the short run, there is no way that this is going to hurt Microsoft.
I don't think so.
Because they're gonna end up making even more money. Because you got to buy the license to run Windows.
Yep. Who the hell wants to buy Windows?
I think in their immediate future, what they're going to focus on is just doing their hardware. You know, the hardware portion of it, where they're trying to sell their hardware because. Not only because it's good looking, but you could run Windows on it if you want. I don't see them shipping anything with Windows on it, but I see them making it easier for you to get Windows on it. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, I don't know. I mean, one of the things that you look at on the flip side to what I said is, you know, if they were going to consider shipping dual boot systems and then all that, you know, they also invested a lot of time and money development into the iLife and iWork series.
Right.
You know, now if they took that and all of a sudden we saw them porting that over to the Windows operating system, I think that that would be a clear indication that the writing's on the wall for OS X. That's just my opinion.
I think so, too. I'm with you on that one, Dan.
Well, we're going to have to find out. I don't see
that would be pretty sick, though, wouldn't it? You know?
It'd be pretty what, sick
won't be too
or
much
slick?
Longer poor souls are making a move, you know?
Sick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Maybe, you know, look at it this way. Maybe Apple's going to be the first system that will run Vista without having hiccups.
Yeah. Did you listen to the interview with Stephen Von Nichols, man?
Yes, I did.
He talks about, you know, running the beta versions of it and what a freaking hog it is, resource hog.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, unless they seriously trim it down. I mean, there is that golden opportunity for Linux to, you know, play itself up, but then at the same time, I'm not so sure that that's going to push people to go to Linux as much as it's going to just, encourage people not to upgrade to Vista.
Yeah. Well, that was part of his point, too. He was also saying that, you know, the next version of Office, you know, the interface is completely different than, you know, the last few releases. You know, why would someone want to go spend $300 and have to relearn the interface and it does the same freaking thing? Well, it's just easier to go to OpenOffice. The interface is close to the current version of Office.
Right, it's just easier, but on the same token, it's also, you know, even easier just to stay where you are.
This is true. There's plenty of people still running Office 97.
Well, who knows?
Yeah. Goes around, comes around, man. Everybody gets saved in the end.
Link's over there. He just bought his... he just downloaded Service Pack 2 last week again. Right, Link?
Sure.
He just got the Internet Explorer update pack.
The IE7 beta.
Did you really hear the reviews of that?
Yeah, it's kind of...
pretty bad, man, from what they're saying.
It's what was it they're saying? It's it looks like they all this work, time, and effort is merely just a catch up to where the other browsers are.
Yeah, they're already behind. Did you get a chance to see the new beta versions of Firefox?
I didn't bother messing with them yet.
Yeah, me either. I'm gonna check it out probably next week.
I tried
you
running.
You didn't bother messing with them yet, Dan, and you were already running freaking the new alpha version of Ubuntu.
Yeah, I'm taking my time on that. I did try when Deer Park came out, they released like an alpha of that. I tried that, and it didn't actually work quite well. But I'll definitely give it a look over sometime soon. Hell, it's probably the default browser for Arch already.
Probably, yeah. My Arch hard drive, man, took a dump on me, man. It's all corrupted and shit.
Is it permanent? Is it like hardware failure?
Hardware failure, man. The hard drive is hosed.
Is that still under warranty?
No.
How old is it?
4 years old.
How old is it?
That drive is maybe 4 years old, 5 years old.
Oh, it is? Cause I think you usually have like a 3-year warranty. You might be able to get it on a
minute. I think it's 4 years. I thought, I guess it says about 4 years old.
It died like 3 days after the warranty expired.
But isn't that always the case, though?
That's it. It has its own little OS in there, embedded operating system that has a just
explodes.
It queries an NTP server every so often, and if if it's a couple days past the warranty date, it crashes the head into the cylinders, the disk.
Isn't that an internet exploder that does that?
That does that by design.
Yeah. So. I got Fedora 5 on this drive. I don't think I'm going to keep it around, even though it's really nice. They've done a good job on it. I don't think it's for me. I'm going to wait till the SUSE comes out, 10.1. I think I'm going to throw that next.
And as sweet as SUSE's 10.1 is going to be, I bet you'll probably find out it's not going to be for you either. And you'll be back to either Slackware, Arch,
or Open SUSE.
SUSE. I'm going to get the real box version when it comes out, I think. It's time. It's time to get another box version. It's been a long time.
You know, I would really like to try the OpenSUSE stuff.
You can do it right now.
But I don't have anything to put it on.
Yeah, I am in the same boat as you.
Well, hard drives are cheap.
I don't want to dismantle my regular, Linux computer, and I don't want to screw my laptop either. So I just don't have anything to put it on.
I've been pretty happy with Ubuntu on my laptop, man. I can't complain. It's been running pretty well.
Yeah, I don't like, as much as how cool dual booting is, I just, if I'm on my main workstation, I find it to be a nuisance to dual boot that.
Yeah, it's a pain in the ass, and I really like having long uptimes, too, so,
Well, that's what the hot swap drives are for, man.
How does the hot swap drive keep you from losing your uptime?
Yeah.
That's true. I don't know. If I ever get a new system anytime soon, it's probably going to be an AMD 64 system. Dual Opteron, man. I think that's the way to go.
What you need to do is you need to suspend your session to the hard drive. Pull it out, put it in another machine, and have it pick it right back up again.
New kernel system. They support the suspend too now.
There you go, Link.
Sure.
Man. That'd be cool. You'd be able to suspend your system, pull out your hard drive, take it to work, plug it in. Comes right up. That's what I want. They call that a laptop, though, don't they?
Yeah.
They do.
I guess I got to get going.
Yeah, me too, man. It's getting late.
I need to get some sleep tonight.
Yep. It's been real, boys.
All right, guys. Good night.
Hey, hugs and kisses to you guys. Yes. Happy holidays.
That's right. Happy Easter.
Yeah. Happy holidays to you, too.
You going
to
be doing the egg hunt this year, Pat?
We did it actually the other day.
You what?
I did one with my son the other day.
Oh, well, that's cool.
At the community center over here in Forks Township.
Are you doing egg hunts with your kid there, Link?
Probably I'll be hiding. I don't know.
Find Daddy.
Yep. Find Daddy just listening for the snores.
Well, you enjoy your new tooth. Don't lose it.
I am, man. I don't think it's coming out. They cemented it in there pretty good, man.
Just be careful that when you're riding with Pat next week that you don't get it knocked out.
Yeah, sure.
We're going to do Fight Club.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. First rule of Fight Club, there is no Fight Club.
First rule of Tech Show, there will be no stream.
The audio will suck one way or the other.
We'll get it right eventually.
one of these days.
You know, it's like that. It happens every year or every couple of months. Something starts to go wrong for a while, and then it fixes itself, and everything's good to go.
Yep.
What was that?
That's me shutting my computer off.
I thought it sounded like a Windows chime.
No, that was KDE chime.
Was that Windows starting up somewhere?
Yeah.
KDE. It's almost Windows.
Windows Vista, right?
No, KDE 351.
Dun-dun-dun. All right, gentlemen. I'm going to go to bed after I get the show up, which means I'll be in bed in about 2 hours.
Good night.
Yeah.
Take it easy there, Linky.
Good night, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Take care.